I love you, man.
I love you.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's December 16, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 156.
This is No Agenda.
Proudly wearing the badge of denialism and coming to you from the minimum security containment cell Crackpot Command Center in Gitmo Nation, West San Francisco, California. Early service in the morning. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, the home of crap and trade, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
Yes. Hey, John. Good morning. A little late for the stream, now that people listening to the podcast care.
Well, you know, they always use the download anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Now we got a lot of people on the stream once again. It's a popular feature of this program.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking that I think I should keep a running log of show notes during the week. So, you know, if you have 3 seconds to find the password to the site, would you mind sending it to me so I could post some stuff?
Okay.
No, seriously. Today.
No, I'm going to do it today.
Today. All you have to do is go to the site.
All I have to do is dig and dig and dig.
And all you have to do is go to the site and say, I've lost my password, and they email it to you. It's that simple.
Oh, you know that I never thought of that.
Oh, you're a dick. I've told you this 4 times.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Oh. I can go do it now. So, but let's.
You know what? You know what this is, John. Friday night we had a party, and it was a party that John invited us to. It was in San Francisco in the $7 million penthouse, which they were trying to sell, I might add. And it was.
But you know what was cool? People actually got a true elevator pitch.
Oh yeah, and actually, that's true. That's right. On the way down, on the way out.
You did because most of them got it on the way.
No, I didn't get it on the way up. So it was a party thrown by you, I think John Markoff and
Greg Zachary,
one other dude.
Drinking club.
Well, it's basically the way I saw it is it's a whole bunch of old journalist dudes. And which, by the way, it's kind of cool, although the crowd was rather interesting. Of course, you had nicely invited a number of Mevio people who were all kind of huddled together, you know, circling the wagons like, wow, this is weird, isn't it? Mm. And I spoke to a number of these people, and, you know, one guy's like, yeah, I'm a friend of John's. Well, you know, I kind of semi-retired. I'm almost 70 now. And, you know, John and I have been working on a book. I know. And, you know, I'm supposed to be poet. He's supposed to do this. I'm like, wait, you're actually waiting for John C. Dvorak to do something? Are you out of your mind? He's the laziest man I know. And everyone's like, yeah, that's right. We all got projects with John. We've all got a project, and he's supposed to do something spectacular, and it never happens.
No, it always happens. It just takes a while.
It was a nice party in that it was nice to see you completely hammered.
Hardly.
You were sauced. In fact, Mickey even said, wow, John's really nice when he's drunk.
I didn't have that much to drink, so it was pretty unlikely.
What are you talking about? Dude, you were wobbling. You were literally wobbling on your feet, and you had this big shit-eating grin on your face. It was cute.
Yeah. I don't remember a thing.
Don't be a denialist. This is No Agenda, episode 156, and we should have an executive producer roll call at this moment.
We only have one today, this week. It's Felix Schudel. Is our executive producer. He gave us $100 he got in cheap.
Wow. S-H-U-D-E-L?
Yep, from Zurich. I believe he's given us money in the past.
Well, and thank you very much, Felix, although I'm kind of shocked that $100, that got him the executive producer credit
for
the show?
Yeah, this is typical. After every time we have like a big...
like we have a night sign up, then everyone's like, oh, those guys got enough money.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Anyway, Felix Schudel, he runs a company called Evolution, Evolution. Like I said, he's in Zurich, mm-hmm. and we'll put him on the show notes, and he'll be the executive producer du jour.
What does Evolution do?
I looked it up once, and I don't remember. Okay. Like he does.
See, there it is. There's your friend. There's your business partner, John. I looked it up.
Well, once. I can't remember everything in the world. Let's see.
You can't remember anything in the world. All right, Felix Schutel, thank you very much. You are the official executive producer of No Agenda, episode 156. You may put it on your resume. You can hand this out. We'll vouch for you. And it actually means something in show business circles. And it makes you look cool. It might get you laid. Then again, it might not get you laid.
It probably won't.
Yeah, you're right. I thought I'd get us started off, John, with... just to get us into the vibe, just a nice little Christmas ditty so that we can feel like we're all one as the No Agenda listeners / producers gather together and pin on our badge of denialism. Listen to this.
Imagine there's no global warming. It's all just been a lie.
This is an awesome... awesome song. The video is even better than the song.
CO2 is not a pollutant.
I have like 3 or 4 of them in the show notes for this week's program at noagendashow.com. Oh yeah, it's fantastic. Listen to this.
Imagine all the people
living
another day.
We're not gonna die, no. It's gotten really crazy. I mean, I don't know if you want to start off with that. It doesn't seem to be much other news other than the continuing saga of Tiger Woods, which is like, oh my God. I mean, could it get any stupider? And I'm seeing, hold on, I should give us the real news.
And now, back to real news.
So I'm watching Geraldo last night, who I thought was kind of tries to be serious, and I think he's only on once a week. On Fox. So I tune in usually just to see what he's doing. And he's all over this Tiger Woods thing. And here's the discerning thing. He has his field reporter interviewing, a Hollywood madam who apparently has supplied multiple women to Tiger Woods. And I'm like, what happened to the code of silence? I mean, I'm not going to order any more escorts. I mean, they all kiss and tell. The madams are telling everybody.
Actually, now that you mention it, there is a unwritten rule that a lot of people in the entertainment industry expect, which is they don't want to really go fooling around, but they will take part with these hookers.
Yeah.
And they don't expect the hookers to be pounding the door saying, hey, you know what happened?
But it's not even the hookers. It's the woman who runs the business. And by
that's
the way,
even worse.
These are $10,000 a night escorts. Can we get a little discretion for that money? What are they made of? Gold? I mean, come on. This is crazy. If you're paying that kind of money, you would expect them to shut up.
Well, the thing is,
they don't.
A couple of things. One, I don't know why this woman would be doing that because it can't be helping her business. Two, I don't know why she'd be doing this because she just basically said she's a lawbreaker. And three, I don't think she has anything to do with it. She's just a publicity hound.
Okay, so
let me put it better, a publicity whore.
Yeah. Well, I'm down on 3 and 4, obviously. By the way, you know, the wording is very careful. Oh, yes, no, I did supply him with female company for entertainment purposes.
Yeah,
but
right.
But they did have sex with him, which that's a legal way. And by the way, it happened in Nevada, where in Las Vegas, where it's legal.
No, Las Vegas is not legal. The two counties where it's not legal in Nevada is the county that Reno's in and the county that Las Vegas is in. In Las Vegas proper, it's illegal.
Oh,
you have to drive about 20 or 30 miles out of town before it becomes legal.
Now he tells me.
Just saying.
So
now
I looked at that port forwarding information that you sent me for Skype, and my head started to spin. This is, you know, I've done port forwarding, but I think this router is just crap. Where AT&T does, you know, it's like some joke. They don't actually want it to work. It's like,
hey, let's send them that router. That's a joke.
Yeah, it doesn't actually work. You know, and I'm so afraid of screwing something up so that it'll never work again. Did you do any port forwarding?
No, I've got it. Somebody sent me a real tight way of doing it, which I'm going to probably implement this week.
Well, maybe we should
try. The problem is the way I have to go patch the registry, and I didn't really want to do that this morning before we did the show, and you know, next thing you know, we're not doing a show at all.
You have to patch the registry to
the way this guy's got it, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
But you have to patch the registry.
Okay. Well, John, you're the one that did all the clips for this show. So do you want to do clips? Do you want to talk a little bit about ClimateGate? Because as you know, John...
Science! Don't be a denier. The science is in! Science!
That's a good one.
It's Jeff Smith, man. He sent me this whole bunch of stuff. Listen to this again. It's so good.
Don't be a denier. The science is in! Science!
I'm going to release.
Everyone agrees.
Oh, he forgot that part. Everyone, he sent me some other like a cappella bits. Like
the science is in.
The guy is awesome. Thank you, Jeff.
I like that the science is in. You can bring that up.
That's a ringtone right there, man. That's a ringtone.
Oh, that's a great ringtone. You're right.
You know what, Jeff?
We put that on one of our sites.
You know what, Jeff has a ringtone service. So go to the jeffsmith.com, GEOFF. And look for his ringtone service. He'll probably put it up for free, just to toss him a little bit of a bone there. Why don't you go get it from Jeff? He'll put it up. It's a great ringtone. I might even use it myself. Actually, he sent me another ringtone, which I think this is the one that I'm going to use. You ready?
Yeah.
Turn up your speakers. I never thought I'd say this, but John, turn up your speakers for my new ringtone, which you'll be hearing 4 times a day at the office.
By Ayn Rand.
God.
I love it.
So, well, let's see. I did send you a bunch of... Most of these are about the same topic. And let's start with the black preacher. Why don't you play this for a minute? And then this is going to be a call forward because we're not going to talk about this immediately. But I just want you to play the black preacher.
Dinner with a little receptivity. You sip on some receptivity. It's so sweet. It's so wonderful. It brings to your awareness the idea that everything you can want, hope for, and desire is already here. It's pulsating everywhere. And you are here to be receptive to it, to open yourself up to it, to make yourself available to it, to say yes to it. So that you're living your life in a sacred yes to life, yes to beauty, yes to joy, yes to love, yes to abundance, yes to prosperity, yes to compassion, yes to service. And you begin to be
Whoa! Did I hear him say yes to service? Or should I just let it play?
No, you can stop it now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes
to service. Whoa.
Yeah, well, this is part of the subtle meme they're throwing at the public right now. But let me ask you a question. So what do you think? Where do you think I picked that clip from?
Well, that's an unfair question because I can see from the name of the clip where you got it from.
Oh, I did? It doesn't say just Black Preacher?
Yeah, it says Black Preacher dash PBS.
Ah.
You fool. Because I never would have guessed it. So that came from public, from the National Treasure.
Yeah, that came from the National Treasure. It sounds like a religious service to me. It sounds like something you get on one of the Christian or other networks that just play this stuff daily 24/7.
But is that his own show, or is it? Was it just
a special? It's a special fundraising. It's About You, I think, is the name of this, and they had this character who we'll discuss later, because it gets actually worse, and I think there's a few things people should know about this. I found it to be, although he's supposedly religion neutral, I found him to be kind of a character who is obviously a Christian megachurch wannabe who decided to slip over to public broadcasting and sell his wares to the donors who cough up as much as $240 for one of his discs through PBS. It's an abhorrent situation. I mean, it's basically religious programming as far as I can tell.
It reminds me a little bit of...
Like Chris Rock a little bit.
Well, remember the preacher that we played talking about the long-legged Mac Daddy?
Oh, the long-legged, yeah.
I didn't play this last week. I did put it in the show notes. I didn't get any comments on it, so I don't know if people saw it or not. But he had this whole rap And he's playing clips now. He's playing clips on his show. And he had a clip of, I'm actually trying to bring it up here. He had a clip of Rick Sanchez on CNN, where Rick Sanchez was really...
Rick Sanchez or Rick Santori? Sanchez,
yeah. Yeah. And Rick Sanchez was really coy about, he went back to the birth certificate issue. And then, and of course, Rick Sanchez says, from all the evidence presented to us, CNN, we have no reason to believe that Obama is not eligible to be president. That's kind of beyond the point, but he goes into this rap, and it's unbelievable about, and he's calling Michelle Obama a dyke. And then at one point, I wish I could find it. Let me see, maybe I could find it here.
From CNN where Rick Sanchez.
Let's see if I can. I should have ISO'd that clip. But at one point he goes, boom, shakalaka. And I'm like, yeah, this guy is on to something. He's really got it down. Boom, shakalaka. It's beautiful. I'll put it in the show notes again so you can take a look at it.
So anyway, back to the climate gate thing. A very interesting phenomenon has taken place.
Well, hold on a second, John. Yeah.
So there's been a switcheroo pulled here that's very interesting to me. If you remember 350.org, and if you start looking up some of their past postings, organized these demonstrations that took place in Denmark.
Which have been, by some accounts, 25,000, by other accounts, 100,000 people protesting.
Yeah, the Guardian, who I consider to be the... by the way, the Guardian actually runs a website. I'll get the name of it. It's in here in this article. Runs a pro-climate... warmist, or whatever you want to call it. Climate change site itself, advocating action.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Guardian, we know all about this.
Yeah,
can use them as a sounding board for what's actually going on. So the Guardian covered these riots to an extreme. So I started reading the articles about it, knowing in advance, because we already played the clips and we talked about 350.org and all the rest of it, that the idea was that the anarchists, the people that were in Seattle, were going to protest in huge numbers, cap and trade, because they felt that while they're in agreement with the climate change science, they think that thing is being stolen by businessmen, so they can just profit, and they'd rather have just cap, no cap and trade. So now you start reading the articles, and here's the interesting switcheroo that took place. There's no mention of cap and trade in any of the articles about these protests. None. And if you go to 350.org right now and go to their homepage, their front page, when they talk about the riots, there's no mention of cap and trade. What they've managed to do is get the anarchists to come out.
Right.
In fact, I'll read a quote from the Guardian Saturday. The demonstration now remember that this is about cap and trade. I mean, we know this. We've heard of how they organize these things. But now, because the media is not going to ask the right questions or do anything about it, and the Guardian, who's going to cover it, they cover it the following way. Let me read. The demonstration organized to urge conference delegates to work out a binding deal to tackle climate change was largely peaceful, but was marred when a group of protesters threw bricks at police. As many as 700 people are thought to have been arrested amid clashes, blah, blah, blah. Organizers estimated up to 1,000 protesters, including some dressed as penguins and polar bears, carrying signs saying, "Save the humans, join the march across the city to the conference where negotiation ministers are meeting." Jump to the London Times, the Murdoch paper. Lin Chi is quoted, a student from Taiwan, says, "This is the right time to shout out and let leaders know this is serious business for us all. Let's hope they listen." So they've basically suckered a bunch of left-wingers to go protest cap and trade and then cover it in a Fox-like way as though it's a protest against the climate global warming.
So what do you think these...
They've completely pulled the rug out from under the cap and trade protest.
So what do you think the strategy is? I mean, a protest is a protest is a protest.
So the strategy is to add further fuel to the global warming fire by saying, wow, look at these kids are so concerned, and to make the people that happen to be at the event, you know, they're so concerned that they're having to protest because not enough action is taking place fast enough. The idea is to create a sense of urgency, which they've been trying to do, if you haven't noticed. Oh, we got to do this right away. It's getting worse by the minute. Yeah. The next thing you know, this, you know, the waters will be up 10 feet tomorrow. So there's apparently I think there's a sense of running out of time because they see the writing on the wall. They're looking at the numbers. They're looking at the polls, and people are you know, saying, wait, this is bogus. There's something fishy here. This isn't right. This doesn't sound right. This doesn't look right. This doesn't feel right. And in Australia, just like yesterday or the day before, they pulled the rug out from under the cap and trade bill just at the last minute. It's quite interesting.
They reversed it. They completely threw it out.
Yeah.
Wow, time to move down under.
So the point is that, well, the point well, is
hey,
that...
Hey, it ain't too bad down there, John. You've never been. No. It ain't too bad. They got good weather.
Yeah, they got California weather. Yeah. Every Australian always says, if you like California, you'll love Australia.
Except we got big knives. Yay.
So anyway, the point is that every coverage of this... of these protests, 700 arrested, you know, basically riots in the street, have completely marginalized the cap and trade, GTO, all the stuff that these people normally protest against. Big government, screwing the little countries, globalization. All this is what they're bitching about, these people, generally. I mean, that's what they do. They're very similar. In fact, there's a lot of attempts to hook them up with the teabaggers who have a similar complaints, except, you know, they have some differences. But the point is that they've managed to sucker these guys to come out and show their, you know, make a big demonstration, but at the same time they purposely misinterpret the demonstration for the public's, you know, for the public, because the media is kind of in on this scam. And 350.org seems to be one of the key elements here, because if you go to their homepage right now, you won't see all the stuff you would have seen in October.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, I think that we could clearly label this...
The distraction of the week.
Hey,
on
no
agenda.
Look over there.
Clearly the distraction of the week, and I think it's paying off quite handsomely. I've been reading a lot of responses to Dutch mainstream articles. Of course, I speak of the language. And, you know, it's unfortunate because the population of the Netherlands, they're very smart people, but they've been so completely suppressed for many, many years, and they're just so compliant with everything.
Maybe they can't be trusted.
No, actually, I think you can trust a lot of them. But what you see taking place is that they're not stupid. They see what's happening. The big announcement this past week is that the European Union pledged almost 8 billion euros for Africa. Now, this, of course, has sparked off a shitstorm of response from people saying, well, hold on a second. You know, we're like out of money in our own country. They're doing the same thing everywhere. It's a global takeover. You know, and we need the money here, and now you're sending it, you're sending money to Africa. We're not actually reducing anything. We're not, you know, driving less. Well, yeah, the people out of work may be driving less, but which may be part of the strategy. You know, we're not really doing anything to combat the fake global warming. We're just taking our money and sending it over there. And of course, this is all exactly what we predicted would happen with the European Union, with the Lisbon Treaty being signed. And, oh, I read this amazing, there are two things in response to what you just said. This is an article that came from Yahoo, and actually it's an article from the Agence France-Presse, AFP. And you got to go all the way. So it's about the conference and about the protests and about the matter of urgency, as you say, John. But then the third or fourth paragraph from the bottom. Let me find it here. So that's when you get all the quotes in there. And, oh man, sorry, I'm spacing on this one. Merkel, here it is. If all goes well, the 194-nation conference under the UN's Framework Convention on Climate Change will wrap up on Friday with a historic deal sealed. There's that seal the deal. By the way, there's another campaign called Tick, 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 only it's spelled TCK, 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 another fine campaign set up by advertising agencies and their clients.
Yeah, it's an advertising.
Yeah.
By the way, at the opening ceremonies for the Copenhagen event, they had some maudlin, the Dutch...
Danish choir. Helena Christensen.
Well, no, they're talking about the Danish women's choir. They came out and they sang this climate change song, and then part of the song was this tick, tick, tick meme, which was, I guess, one of the parts of some part of the song. I couldn't understand. It was in Danish.
Oh, really? You can't understand Danish?
No.
So here it is. The head of the Nobel-winning UN panel of climate scientists, that, of course, is the dude who looks like the Geico caveman. The Indian dude warned on Saturday that failure to seal the deal would deal a heavy blow to the nation state system. What does that mean, John?
What does that mean?
The nation's, well, it can only mean one thing. It's they're calling it the nation state system. That to me is just a global government. Nation state system, where all the nations are then considered states and it's in a system, so it's a global government. And maybe we should just go into this briefly again, because I've noticed I've gotten a couple of new, I got Nick at the office to listen to one of our shows, and now he's completely hooked. And he's like, you know, I feel so stupid when I listen to you guys, because, you know, I'm over here in Tiger Woods land, and, you know, there's all this stuff going on that I know nothing about, and I barely understand it. Maybe you can just briefly explain, John, from your viewpoint, why a global government is perhaps not such a good idea.
Well, let's go over some of the issues here that the and by the way, we have to wrap this around into something else, which I was reading more and more about, which is population control.
Yeah, well, I see that. That's my next point on the agenda. But yes, go ahead.
The problem with global government, of course, is only designed for one thing. See, over time, you know, people, you know, they accumulate a bunch of wealth, and there's certain families, and they get all this, they get castles, they got, you know, essentially billions of dollars and a lot of, and they get to have a pretty good life for themselves.
Royal family, how it started. Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things that, that they keep getting involved, there's two things. Once they get up there in the upper echelon, they get involved with a couple of things. And there's plenty of YouTube videos, by the way, with all kinds of different people, from David Rockefeller to Ted Turner to everybody else, talking about population control.
Yes.
And getting the population down to 500.
In fact, in Copenhagen, the Chinese delegation literally called for population control. And of course, the Chinese have a one child per family law. And they must have like 100 million abortions a year, because you get penalized, right? If you have more than one child.
Well, you can actually buy a license.
Oh, you can buy child credits. Ah, perfect.
It's cap and trade.
Cap and trade.
So anyway, they have what is obvious to everybody is that over time, as things change, the one thing that they really can't deal with are wars. And so the internationalists are always the same people. They want global governance because they honestly believe, even though I don't think it's true because you can still have a civil war, but they honestly believe by one world government controlled by one single place, there will be no more wars, because wars are the only thing that actually threaten their wealth. Because in a war, everything's bombed.
Yeah, I mean, imagine being a
multimillionaire in Dresden, you know, and owning a skyscraper. I mean, the thing was flattened in World War II.
Yeah, those aren't the true wealthy elite. The true wealthy elite are financing these wars, and war is a huge moneymaker.
Well, that the wealthy elites who want to steal from somebody else are financing, but most of the internationalists who are very wealthy, and many of them elite, they don't want war because they don't want to risk the possibility that bombed.
So that's why they're
lynched
on board with the program. Right. Gotcha.
I mean, look at these, you know, look at the Revolution. What happened to the top people? They all got their heads chopped off. You know, who needs this? One day you're like running the place, the next day you get your head in the basket.
Whoops. That's the definition of a day wrecker right there.
So that's, you know, I mean, yeah, there's people, I think they're all middlemen that would like to have wars, but so they can steal from other people. But the fact of the matter is the big internationalists, those big shots, and you can find their publications all over the place that went to one global governance. They're looking for any way to get it. This climate thing is part of it, and because you keep reading about it, and then they want to, you know, kind of change our attitudes about what we think is a good way to live, especially Americans. I'll take another quote from that London Times article that was talking about these riots, and they're quoting some woman, Mrs. Mason, who is like taking a side. She says, quote, things are getting worse, whatever that means, and it's partly because of our Western way of life. We need to do something about it.
Yeah.
And you got British actress Helen Baxendale and supermodel Helena Christensen were among the celebrities joining the demonstrators, and Christensen said, this will be very bad. This will be very bad politicians if they do not hear us by now. That's a typo in the Times.
But you know what? It's not even that, John. We got a message from one of our younger Gitmo Nation citizens who listen to the show. Just listen to what's happening in our American high schools.
Well, hello there, Adam and John.
I think he wants to be a disc jockey, so you kind of got to listen through that. But his message is stunningly frightening.
Crackpot and buzzkill, yin and yang. Okay, so I'm a high school senior, and I was in my sixth period class last Friday. And part of the class, this is like a rare class that you actually talk about money and things that might be worth talking about. Anyway, so we were in there, and he was talking about money, and we're talking about bailouts, and he was like, oh yeah, and the way we're spending and the way it's going, we're heading towards a one world government, and we're going to end up having a global currency. And he was going in detail, in great detail about this, and then he was like, and you know, that's a good thing because blah 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 blah, and that pissed me off. And I argued it with him, and he almost kicked me out of the classroom.
So they're teaching it in school.
Yeah,
they're teaching one world government in school, and you know, and the thing
it's treasonous.
Thank you very much. It is treasonous. It is totally against the Constitution. And to teach that to kids, I mean, it's okay to have, I think, places of learning is where you should have debate and where these things need to be discussed. But to actually force this upon children as a good thing is wrong.
Well, where did they get the idea that it was a good idea in the first place? You know, especially people at that level, a teacher, he's one of the first people who's going to get screwed over by a global government.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say about teachers. If they were really good at anything they taught, they'd be doing it.
And that's the old, those who can do, those who can't teach. That's the old gag. But obviously, these guys are good at propaganda, so, but that's what, I don't know. That's disgusting.
So,
but I was having the same issue with my kids get this. You know, they had to go through this nonsense. Most Americans who have, you know, look around popular culture and they absorb a kind of a freedom mentality that they can usually fight off. It's like a, you know, fight off this sickness. But global governance per se is bad. I mean, that's what Hitler wanted to do.
There's a proposal.
There's your Mike Godwin moment.
There's a proposal in the British Parliament calling for mandatory criminal background checks for parents who want to homeschool their children. Which just shows you that they want your kids to get their education and get
actually, California is a good example to talk about homeschooling again. We homeschooled our daughter through Washington State.
By the way, is brilliant. Your daughter is brilliant. She doesn't say much, but she's brilliant.
She's got a straight A student.
Yeah.
She was going to regular student high school now. But anyway, Washington State's very amenable to homeschoolers, and they have a program where you sign up with the state, and the state, all they do is they test the child two or three times a year to make sure that you're just not one of these crackpots, teaching them nothing. And so you actually do have to teach the kids. in California, they have no system like that. It's actually illegal technically to homeschool, even though they've backed off on actually enforcing the law. It's against the law. They want you to go into these schools, and so at least you show up and get them the $50-$100 a day they get from the state for every student that shows up in class. And I mean, the whole thing's a moneymaker. And the state of California has oftentimes, you know, got found parents with homeschoolers and then charge them with truancy. I mean, this state is loaded with propagandists.
What is a truancy?
That means you're not at school when you're supposed to be.
Oh, okay. Playing hooky.
Yeah, what's truancy?
Okay.
There used to be a truancy officer that used to drive around in a black and white with the red lights and sirens and the whole thing.
Picking up kids.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
we'll get that again.
Be the case in the 50s,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah. So the obvious question, John, two questions, really. In your many, many years on this planet Earth, have you ever seen a move this strong towards, because it's been there all the time, this move towards global government. Have you ever seen it this strong? And the logical follow-up question is there any stopping it? Do you think that they'll actually push it
through? I think it was almost this strong. I wasn't around in the 20s, but I think it was at least close to being this strong after World War I. Because that was such a mess that they said, we can't let this happen again. So they developed the League of Nations, and they tried to, you know, push, you know, an agenda. The problem is when you put all these people together, you get end up with a milquetoast kind of governance.
Right.
And that allowed, actually, it was, I think, partially the League of Nations and the fact that they were trying to do some global governance after World War I that led to the rise of Hitler. And World War II, which was worse than World War I in many ways, and it brought the Japanese to the forefront. Because what happens is, you know, some of these people are not in it, the Emperor of Japan or any of the military of Japan in World War II, they weren't trying, they were trying for global government too, you know, to get together with the Axis, you know, Hitler, Mussolini, and Japan. You know, that was their attempt at global government. I mean, does this sound like something you want to live under? I mean, this is essentially where it all leads.
So if we follow the obvious fractal, then this could only lead to another global war.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will. In 2020, there'll be a civil war in the EU, and we'll be back to scratch.
And who do you think it'll be? And by the way, if you do the math, if you do the math on this population control, and this is also being taught in schools, you know, there's, you know, we need to have only, you know, less children. You can't sustain a culture in a country, a society, unless you have, I think, at least 2.1 or 2.3 children per family household. Otherwise, you get too many people entering the workforce, leaving within two generations, then it collapses because there's no young people to support the old people, right? It just doesn't work that way.
Right. So they want to, and you have to, you know, this always brings us back to the congresswoman talking about the government killing the oldsters.
Because it will not put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government.
That one.
So all the population studies show that, you know, we're having waning populations in most of Western society. And so, you know, you have Muslims moving in, the culture changes and whatever.
Which is huge. Within 10 years in the Netherlands, 50% of the population will be Muslim and not born in the Netherlands, which, okay, that's the multicultural society the pink or the rose government pushed on them for about 10 years. But that's what you're going to get. And you're going to wake up one day and go like, I don't speak the language. You know, just be aware that that's going to happen. It's nuts.
So they have, like, you know, dying cultures. The Italians are the ones that are cited the most often because they're not interested in having kids at all. And
they sure practice a lot.
Yeah, they practice, but, you know, nothing comes of it. So
something comes, just not kids. All right.
So the thing, drum roll. So the point is that if you're going to cut down your population, you're going to do it with, you know, the whatever methodology you want. A lot of this stems back to that guy Ehrlich, who was over at Stanford, who pushed the book. Let's see, what was the name of that thing? The population control books that came out in the 70s. He actually. I'll dig this quote up in a minute. Let me just read this.
The population bomb?
Yeah, the population bomb. In 2006, Lara Knutson wrote that Ehrlich's views were accepted by many population control advocates in the United States and Europe in the 60s and 70s. She chose a brief passage from the final chapter of Population Bomb to show that Ehrlich had discussed an extreme solution to overpopulation, quote, compulsory birth regulation, through the addition of temporary sterilants to water supplies or staple food. Doses of antidote would be carefully rationed by the government to produce the family desired family size. Now, these, you know, somebody pointed out that these population control advocates essentially want to kill you and get the population down to something they can manage so they can protect themselves and their wealth from the masses, the, you know, considered idiots by many of the population control people. These people are telling you, it's in what they say. It's right there. They're advocating it. The guy from China came and said it Copenhagen thing. The people that are talking at Copenhagen, many of them are talking about population control and global governance. Ehrlich talks about doping the water and having a special antidote.
Oh, yeah, no, they're talking about 300 chemicals at least that will sterilize you.
They're not keeping this a secret. They're not keeping this a secret. They are right out front.
Yeah.
And what their intentions are, and why aren't we paying any attention to them?
This is exactly what we do here on this program. We go out with this formula.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Unfortunately, we have to hit our listeners in the mouth, because you're right. They're not keeping any secrets. They're just saying it outright. And it's not necessarily that they're going to go kill people, but you're not going to get the health care when you're old, that's for sure.
Well, the thing is, if you're going to have a declining population in the society, which would cause nothing but a problem as far as I can tell, but you're going to have a situation where there's going to be too many old people, because that's, you know, there's not, you have to grow the population to support the old people in their retirement. So you're going to have death panels. I mean, even though she was being flippant when she brought this meme up, fact of the matter is it makes nothing but sense. You know, if you're going to drop the population, the oldsters have got to go.
Yeah, this is your government speaking about what will actually happen.
Because it will not put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government.
But it's already happening. And I've witnessed this. You know, this is exactly how it works with socialized medicine. I've witnessed it in two countries, the Netherlands and the United Kingdom. After a certain age, it's around 70, when you actually need health care the most, because that's when stuff starts to break down, you're no longer of use to society. And then you literally do not get what you need. Hey, why would we give you a new kidney? Why? Why? So you can leech off society for another 10, 15 years? No, I'm sorry. No service for you. And it's a very weird cultural phenomenon, whereas every indigenous peoples respect and look after their elders. Why are we not like that?
Well, because we have teachers in high schools telling kids about how great it would be if we had one world government that wasn't our, you know, that we had no control over.
This reminds me of that George Carlin sketch. Do you remember that? God, you know, if we ever needed George Carlin, it's right now. That's probably why that's probably what happened. You know, they're like, oh, he had a heart attack. Because he was onto it. Same thing. I saw John Lennon. By the way, it was the anniversary of his death last Thursday. Maybe it was last Sunday. Thursday or Sunday, we missed it. And I saw him on the David Frost show. And David Frost is sitting there, and it's John and Yoko. And it's like, well, what about this overpopulation thing? And this is the 70s. And John's like, he's like, I don't believe in that. That's bull crap. You know, we just need to find the balance between everybody. And Yoko's like, oh, whatever she said. And then David Frost says, oh, no, overpopulation is a serious issue. And then Lennon's like, no, this is bull crap. And then David Frost was like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And just goes on to the next question, like, shut up. And then what happened to John Lennon? Man, he was out there. He was bigger than the whole Copenhagen thing. Remember, they had John and Yoko did those huge signs everywhere. They were getting some attention.
Yeah.
People were listening to the message he was sending, and I think that they got very, very nervous about the message of actual, love. Anyway, so back to George Carlin. He had this great, actually, I have it. You want to hear a bit of the George Carlin sketch about the Earth? Do you remember
that
one?
Yeah, go for it.
It's really good.
We're so self-important. So self-important. Everybody's going to save something now. Save the trees. Save the bees. Save the whales. Save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're going to save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit.
Oh, I miss him so much.
Tired. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. Been here 4.5 billion years. Did you ever think about the arithmetic? Planet has been here 4.5 billion years. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags.
I'll put the whole thing in the show notes at noagendashow.com. Guy is a genius. Ugh. I miss him.
So, we got any more? Yeah, it was a pathetic situation that we're living with.
Yeah, and so just to wrap up the gate.
But by the way, what really bugs me the most, though, is the knee jerk people that just whatever they're fed, the science is in whatever they just it's just you can't even discuss this with them.
The science is in! Science!
And science is exactly the thing you are supposed to be able to discuss, because people were saying for many years the Earth is flat. The science is in. There was no doubt about it.
Science!
And then some brave souls went and proved them wrong. And boy, that really helped the world. So yeah, it's irksome, but the only advice I can give you is turn off your television. That's really it. And boy, the hype machine is just rolling and rolling and rolling. I mean, you're not hearing about 0.1% of what's really being discussed and what's really going on. There's open letters from thousands of scientists to the Copenhagen panel, the UPCC.
Well, there's a clip I didn't get, which was a beauty, which is on the internet. It's on YouTube, where this guy is asking a Stanford professor.
Oh, and he gets told to shut up, right?
Yeah, he's told to shut up, and then a big fat creepy guard with a big gut, you know, and a rent-a-cop comes in there, and he rousts the guy, and he threatens him with bodily harm.
I have it here. It's Phelan McClear asked Stanford professor Stephen Snyder some inconvenient questions about ClimateGate.
Professor Phil Jones in asking colleagues to delete emails and the destruction of publicly funded data was gathered by public funds.
I don't know what he asked, what he said.
So he's asking the question. First, some women come over and try to take the microphone from him.
Values I don't trust.
Well, yeah, now back it up again. Back it up, because the professor, the thing that's interesting to me, I mean, I saw the woman come over and then they tried to get the mic away from him. And somebody, you know, I guess it's been on for a while because I had to clip it down a little bit. But the thing that got me was the response from the professor was so mean-spirited. And I mean, because he could have answered the question the following way. The guy asked the question, "What don't you think it's crappy that they deleted these emails?" And the professor could have said, "You know, I don't know personally what's really going on over there. From what it looks like, it doesn't look like a positive thing. And I would, you know, I'm sorry they did that." Just something simple.
Okay.
But instead, he gets his panties in a bunch and he gets all bent out of shape, which really makes me suspicious. And I would like people to listen to this professor's response.
Here we go.
Gallery by public funds. I don't know what he asked, what he said. I don't make comments on redacted emails presented to me by people whose values I don't trust. I would have to see the whole thing, so I cannot very well comment. What I can say is that private communications that people have between each other certainly are not public documents. And
but the university has confirmed they are accurate.
Everybody says privately. Well, now let me. I agree. We'll make it short.
Okay. So just to give you some context to the video. So there are two different women trying to pull the microphone, and it's close up. You see this, and they have these horrified looks, like, "How dare you ask the professor this question?" And now that you're right, there's this really, this is what in the 60s we'd call a pig. Security guard, a pig, who, by the way, is carrying a sidearm. And now listen to what. So these guys are accredited journalists. They're at this event. The guy asks a very normal question. Here's how they're treated. Here it comes.
I'm going to ask you to shut that off for a second, please. I just see a badge.
Yeah, show me your badge. Ausweis bitte.
Sorry, I'm a member of the press. I want that to be a
professional.
If you don't shut that off, I'm going to take it away from you.
I'm going to take it away from you if you don't shut that off, because I'm the police.
He's talking to the cameraman there.
Yeah, he is.
Talking to the camera.
Sir, we are the press. I don't care.
I don't care you're from the press. Slave, shut up.
Shut it off. If it happens again, take it away from you, you're going out. Is that understood?
Is that understood? Oh, and he gets right in the guy's face, too, in the cameraman's face. Is that understood? I think he's a cop. I don't think he's a security guard.
No, I just wanted to check your badge.
He's a UN security guard. There you go. UN security guard who carry guns.
Yeah, this is your global governance cop.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, speaking of which, I was looking at the Copenhagen police outfits. They've got these really weird, like, yellow, I guess it is a triangle, yellow triangle, like, pyramid type deals on their uniforms and their helmets. Is that a Copenhagen thing? Is that a Danish thing? Or is that another global government thing? Cause it's kind of ominous looking.
Do you have a link to a picture?
Yeah, hold on a second. I got one right here.
I know that Copenhagen police have a weird outfit, somewhat weird outfit, unless they're wearing all black.
Yeah, it's not a very clear picture, unfortunately. It's taken from a video. It's in your Skype right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, but it's like yellow and it has like some dots on it. I don't know.
You're talking about the triangle?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a triangle with.
Can't quite tell what's on
it. Two numbers. It's got two numbers on it. One above the other. The one I can see is 11 over 13, and the other one looks like 11 over 60 something.
Ah.
And,
it's donation numbers for No Agenda. It's special code.
And they're wearing the same idiotic triangle, which is very, very creepy looking.
Yeah.
It looks very, I mean, you know, the fascists always like to have some sort of symbol.
Symbol. Well, this is something that, it's just fascinating me, particularly as we get closer to a very special.
No, this looks like a global government outfit with a triangle on the back of the head. There's all that's missing is a barcode kind of emblazoned on their forehead.
So there are so many different ancient symbols that we are not aware of what they do that have very deeply rooted DNA response level or DNA level responses within our psyche that are being used over and over. I mean, it's just, it's the same thing. It's like, it's almost like throwing the O, you know, which of course is like the, is very close to the Freemason, you know, all seeing eye pyramid. I mean, all these pyramids and triangles, they hold special power deep within our psyche. And we're entering into a very, you know, interesting astronomical, astrological, I should say, period right now between now and this and the winter solstice. And people are starting to feel things. I read all the stuff about moving from the third into the fifth dimension and the ascension, but there is totally something going on right now. And some call it the awakening, some call it, you know, whatever it is. But these symbols are not by accident. Like we talked about on the last show, turning the stars on the United States flag and on the Republican, the GOP elephant upside down to show devil's horns. There, you can Google pictures of everyone from Hillary Clinton to the Pope to President Obama throwing the devil sign, you know, with forefinger and pinky. I mean, all of this stuff has meaning. It's just this is not what we teach in school. What we teach in school is one currency, global government is good. And by the way, if you have a brother and sister, you should go kill them because, you know, they're basically eating up the earth. And I'm highly interested in this stuff. And, I mean, it's just, I've been doing more research on the on that beautiful spiral that appeared over over Norway, and this has now also happened in Russia. It happened the day after in Russia, so it's like, okay, of course this was a Russian rocket. They said in Norway, also in China, and I have YouTube videos which will be in the show notes, and there was this kind of like pyramid shaped thing over the Kremlin in Moscow that was outrageous. It's like this huge funnel type thing floating over the Kremlin.
You got this from a Russian publication? This has, well.
Yeah, it is from Russia Today. Yeah.
But so,
I mean, yeah, you can be, you know, disenchanted, jaded, whatever you want to call it, and say, oh, it's doctored, it's edited, it's Photoshop.
Sure it
I'm sure it isn't. There is so much, John, there are so many, just, if you just took 2 seconds and just put aside your prejudice and look at all of the UFO sightings. And I'm not talking about flying discs. I'm talking about huge arrays of lights that are darting across the sky in South America. Just the other day above Chile. It's happening everywhere. There is something going on. Definitely. Now, of course, I know what it is, but if I say the Galactic Federation is looking out for us, then everyone starts calling me a crackpot.
This is where you.
I have to bring it differently. Maybe I should say
the science is in.
They're coming to save us. There's no doubting it.
Let's go over some more of the climate change stuff before we close the gate.
Okay.
I want to point out something interesting. There's been a there's this interesting campaign about the, you know, the one of the best documentation or pieces of documentation for the denialists, and I want to talk about that for a minute too. These terminology that are floating around is a report done by, and I'm going to read a quote from a Wired article with Kari Nordgaard.
Oh, yeah. Who has been a climate researcher and fellow for many, many years.
Yeah, she's on the dole. She's on the tit.
She is totally sucking on the tit.
So she goes, why don't people seem to care, asks Wired. Yeah, right, they don't care. That's why everyone's, you know, all over the place. On the one hand, she says, Kari, there have been extremely well-organized, well-funded climate skeptic campaigns. Those are backed by ExxonMobil in particular.
Yeah, I read this, and I'm like, what?
And the same PR firms who helped the tobacco, by the way, a PR firm and advertising agency created the code Copenhagen.
Copenhagen, so yeah, and tick, tick,
anyway,
tick.
She goes, deny the link between, and that's your boy, you do association, by the way. You know, they try to do it with the deniers, is an associative word, which indicates Holocaust deniers, and so you try to pin that on people. Most people didn't get the importance of that, and they came up with denialist, which actually watered down the other associative word, because denial just sounds idiotic. So, but that's the one that they've kind of floated towards.
It's kind of the politically correct version of denier.
Yeah, so they don't get the fact that deniers is much better in terms of marginalizing the complainers, which is, you know, what we're talking about. Now, the other trick is this one, which is that she says, it's the same PR firms who helped the tobacco industry deny the link between cancer and smoking. They're involved with magnifying doubt around climate change. So you do an association thing here. It's like, we all know, everybody knew that smoking caused cancer. It was not like a rocket science. And yeah, there were PR agencies and the tobacco industry lied. But, you know, that was just, it's got nothing to do with this. It's a completely different topic. I mean, you could twist it around to be just the opposite about it, you know, your flat earth argument. But the funny thing is that ExxonMobil, which did produce a very interesting report, and you can link to it here and there. It's quite good. It's huge, with all kinds of good charts and data, not done by PR agencies, but done by researchers. Just because ExxonMobil, evil ExxonMobil, did it to protect their shareholders, if nothing else, because they're actually literally under attack, who's to blame them? You would expect them to come out with something big and definitive. That's their job. So why is it a negative thing? Why is it evil? It seems to me, and then associated with the tobacco business, which is a complete bogus analogy, is to me a very interesting propagandistic trick that, by the way, and anyone out there, when you see a newspaper article that uses deniers or denialists as opposed to skeptics.
Burn it. Burn that paper.
That writer has got an agenda.
Yeah, and burn that paper. And any one of the 65 newspapers that published a coordinated article, editorial, managed by The Guardian, which, as you pointed out on the last show, didn't even happen when Hitler was coming to power. No one even did that.
Right. No, that's amazing that they did it at all. I mean, they should be ashamed of themselves, these newspaper editors, for doing that. You write your own material? You know, the problem with newspapers, I've talked about this before, and they have this problem when you go to Google, you can see it. In fact, I have an interesting stat when I was doing the thing on the riots in Copenhagen. There was 3,700 articles about it, and various Copenhagen articles, 4,400 for Tiger Woods. Anyway, the point is that the newspapers must realize that the real threat to them is redundancy. I mean, the same yes. AP story runs in 50 papers.
Yeah, and besides that, you know, they're all sucking on the tit as well, because they're all in line for a bailout from the government. So this is the fix is completely in. Yeah, they will.
Of course they will.
Not
going to happen.
Well, they're not going to get money. They're going to get tax credits and tax breaks. I finished reading Martin L. Gross's book, National Suicide. Wow. Oh, wow. What a page turner that is. And it shows the megalomania. How many times have I said that politics is just show business for ugly people? This is exactly what it is. It is the biggest sin, the tenth sin, is greed, or what is it?
Oh, the seven deadly sins.
Seven deadly sins is seventh, then, yeah. And it's megalomania. They're just totally into themselves. They're digging themselves. They love the power. They want to be reelected. They're so out of control. Al Gore thinks his poetry is good. It's just crazy, you know, and...
The problem is that since we created a celebrity culture that has really no educational background or can't think for itself, all the earmarks of celebrity are with these people like Al Gore. I mean, the guy's, you know, a celebrity, and he's treated as such, and so whatever he says goes, and people are just, you know, would love to touch his jacket.
So what do we do about it, John? We never talk about that on this show. What do we actually do to stop it?
Oh, well, I think, you know, what you do to stop is you got to get the educational system to actually teach people how to think for themselves.
Yeah, but how do you do that? How do you actually change
it? We have no ability. We are so down on the ladder of things.
It was Carter who, in the United States, installed the Department of Education. Since then, it's gone downhill because, you know, essentially all of these schools just wait, sucking on the tit, just waiting for some more money so they can give themselves some more dough. The only jobs that were saved or created by the humongous bailout were teachers, but they're not actually given anything good. There's a controlled curriculum that comes from one from the state. This is not good.
And the controlled curriculum is pretty dubious.
Which is why many people are choosing for homeschooling, which is exactly why the government in the United Kingdom, which is the beta test for everywhere else, is saying, you need to be a background check. We got to make sure you're not evil. We got to make sure you're not teaching your kids something that's not on the agenda.
Well, so now, you know, there was a good story that was on the blog, by the way, about they were going to start investigating toddlers and preschools to make sure they're not getting brainwashed by Islamic extremists. And by the way, Santa Claus was just arrested in the UK for suspicious behavior.
So one more report that was in the Financial Post, which I'll also put in the show notes, which is all about the I think it is called a eugenicist agenda. The title of it is The Real Inconvenient Truth. And right there, I mean, again, this is not being hid. The inconvenient truth overhanging the UN's Copenhagen conference is not the climate, but that humans are overpopulating the world. So we're going to get screwed both ways. One is they're going to take our money. They're going to send it off to Africa, which, you know, has some merit. But you have to understand that just like in the Confessions of an Economic Hitman, great book that we've talked about here, there's strings attached to it, which include all that money only being able to be used on products from, General Electric. So you have to buy new grids. It has to be from, you know, companies who are in the game and on the agenda. And since that's probably not going to work and this whole cap and trade is just more ways to steal your money, well, the final solution is we just have to have less people. That'll come in two ways. One is killing old people. And the other one is forcing this agenda of no more than one child per person for some cultures, which, of course, will mean that there'll be a huge imbalance. So I conclude, John, the only way to combat this craziness is to fuck like jackrabbits. We've got to make more kids. Mickey, get over here. We got to make some kids. Yeah, we got to make some kids to save the world.
Well, you know, they had, remember these, there's a supposedly, they're like, teen pregnancy is like an interesting phenomenon because every time there was like sort of a cult that supposedly, at least the media played it.
Hold on, she's jumping on me, John. Hold on.
These girls will what's going on over there?
Okay, John, we get it. Just let me say, this is the only way to save the world is to have at least 5 kids. 5 kids, I tell you, because the science is in. Everyone agrees this is the way to do it.
Science.
All right, teen pregnancies.
So, you know, when they have these little, you know, these kind of pockets of teen pregnancy, they get all bent out of shape about it and make these girls miserable. And they have long lectures and Law and Order shows and all the rest of it, how you're ruining your life and this and that. You should have a kid when you're 50. Or don't have a kid. Put it off. Have a career.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, the whole career thing, all the women out there that have been suckered into putting off marriage and having children into their late 30s or 40s or beyond, because it turns out that you can't really, your career only gets rocking when you're 40.
Yeah. And then you could only have one kid, and then you're right on with the agenda. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, work for the state. Bill and Hillary Clinton are the perfect example of that kind of thing.
They are a model. They're a model. One kid, careers, running the country, bringing the drugs in from Afghanistan. Fantastic. Let's close the gate. So don't ever let me hear you say that we don't offer solutions. I think it's...
I never said anything. I don't care.
The word is legs. Go out, spread the word, and make babies.
So...
that's a solution right there.
I want to talk about public broadcasting a little bit.
Do you want to... okay, let's do public broadcasting, and that'll take us right into our donation drive for today, because, of course, public broadcasting... sucks off of the teat of global industry. Every NPR or public broadcasting program is sponsored by huge companies such as General Electric, who are embedded firmly in the middle of ClimateGate, who will make
and Monsanto
worn stuff. Yeah, there's Monsanto. There's British Petroleum.
Monsanto. Archer Midlands, Daniels, Dominion, whatever they
are. Archer Daniel Midland Company, who make all kinds of chemicals. That's what the Informant was about, the Matt Damon movie that went nowhere. Funny book. They tried to make the movie really funny, but the book was actually just funny in the unbelievable, unbashful way that these executives buy off politicians. Warren Buffett's son involved in that whole scandal, never talked about. Yeah, these are the big companies. So you know that they're not going to talk about anything that goes against these big sponsors. So if it's General Electric, they're not going to talk negative about the president. They're not going to talk negative or be critical of the war machine, the military-industrial complex, or in this case, even about climate change, as General Electric stands to be a huge beneficiary of the money that is being sent by the poor citizens of Gitmo Nation Europe. It's being sent over without their consent, without them voting on it, by a bunch of politicians who have hijacked all these nations in Europe in the European Union under the Lisbon Treaty.
So let's play a couple of these clips I got. This was that it's about you. You know, one of the things PBS has done, the TV especially, has created these, you know, these this started some years ago, these quasi-religious, you know, inspirational speakers, motivational speakers that come on PBS, supposed to be an educational channel. I mean, I don't mind watching, like Nova. I mean, Frontline's a great show, definitely well done. But then what's the point of all these quasi-religious programming, you know, to suck in, I guess, the old gray-haired ladies in Berkeley that, you know, have a spiritual vacuum in their life because they're old maids, a term that's not even used
See?
Anymore.
Go out and get yourself a granny and make some babies.
Play a clip B. We'll just listen a little bit, and then I'll get you into an interesting phenomenon I spotted.
Hello, I'm Kathy Diamond, and we're going to be returning to the final part of The Answer Is You. But first, we're taking a brief intermission to invite you to support this public television station. Michael Bernard Beckwith is here in the studio with us to help encourage you to do so. And I really appreciated the Bob Marley comment about not complaining.
Right, right. You know, complaining is a public declaration of your inability to see opportunities.
Oh.
Here we go.
Oh, my God. First of all, stay away from Sir Bob, man. Don't mess with Bob Marley. You're going to get me really pissed off.
To see possibilities. The universe is infinite, and there are infinite possibilities all around us. When we're complaining, we hinder our perception. We can't see rightly. We can't see the opportunities that are here, and we stumble through our own complaining. It's not a good practice.
What Bob Marley lyric is he referencing?
I have no idea. And this guy's this mystical mumbo jumbo that's kind of like a ridiculous kind of composite of one cornball concept after another, which is all this guy really delivers, is actually so annoying. By then, you have to imagine this Michael Bernard Beckwith, as if that's his name. Mr. Michael Bernard Beckwith is this black guy with long dreads. Ugh. And a bald head.
I mean, when you listen to Bob Marley, get up, stand up for your rights. I mean, is he referencing that song by any chance?
I have no idea. I don't know what they're talking about. Right. Continue with the clip. I'll get a couple more little jabs, and then we'll go to the good stuff.
So, how can we appreciate what we do have?
Now, what I like to say is, what you appreciate, appreciates. Just by placing your attention on something that you're grateful for, beginning to be...
Count your blessings.
Grateful for everything in your life, developing a high state of appreciation for life and what you have, opens your mind up to...
For our message to control you.
New ideas. It opens your minds up to insight. It opens your minds up to moment-by-moment revelation or guidance from within you, just through appreciation. Now, it's a practice. It's something we have to practice, and a lot of the products we have here, when people donate to the PBS, helps them in that practice.
Okay, hold on a second. We can use this, John. We can derive some learning from this. What is this guy's name again?
Michael Bernard Beckwith. You can look him up on the net. I'm sure there's some photos of him.
Beckwith?
Yeah, Beckwith. B-E-C-K-W-I-T-H, I think.
Oh, look at this guy. He looks like Milli Vanilli.
Yeah, that.
He exactly. looks like a Millie. He's the lost Millie. He's either Millie or Vanilli. Oh my goodness!
No, jump to PBS clip C.
Okay, here we go.
Or contribute $75, and you can choose either the DVD of the show, The Answer Is You, or the book that the program was based on. With a $150 gift to this station, we'll send you three gifts:
get
the DVD, the book, and a music CD of songs featured in the show. Make a generous $240 investment in this station, and we'll send you
investment. Invest in your future.
The first was a gift, but $240 is an investment.
Yeah, it's it's a good investment.
Do I get a stock certificate?
Yeah, it's a good investment in our children's future to get Millie Vanilli on stage more often.
The Answer Is You package, which includes the DVD, the book, the music CD, a second book by Michael Bernard Beckwith called Spiritual Liberation, and the Life Visioning Kit. The choice is yours.
The Life Visioning Kit. This
yeah,
is what
the
we
life
need, John.
Visioning Kit, which I believe is a mirror.
Just pick a level of support that's right for you and give us a call or contribute on our secure website.
So this jabroni is twisting the words of the true prophet Bob Marley into this crap? This is what he's doing. He's like playing off a Rastafarian vibe. If the Rastas ever saw this guy, they'd chop his head off in a second.
Probably put in the mailbox. So,
Oh my God.
So one of the interesting tricks, actually my son spotted this, and I don't know why, because I've been watching these things way too long. I didn't notice it, and he never watches this stuff ever. And it's the, this is like a setup. This is not even local. They have these people standing, and they have this woman that's interviewing this Beckwith character, standing in front of a whole bunch of old-fashioned CRTs that people sitting behind with a little ear thing in there, and they're supposedly taking calls, right? It's a set. And it's not even a set local. This is one of those systems where there's a PBS that does this, and then you get a,
it's a set that on a Lazy Susan when it's time to
yeah, and they're not that, but they probably one group gets part of the money because they set this up and they're the sales pitch, and
sure.
The local station gets a piece of it,
sure,
maybe less than half.
Oh,
for all
it's
I
a
know.
Very sophisticated system. They, right. they know what they're doing. Yeah,
but so they have. But here's the joke of it. Now you're gonna play clip D. Tone, and what I want people to listen to here is the laughable, because you got to imagine everyone's on headsets and they're all behind these monitors, and they're the laughable use of an old fashioned Bakelite phone bell ringing, as if there's a phone sitting there ringing with bells in it.
Hello, I'm Lina Heil, and we hope you are enjoying this show with Michael Bernard Beckwith. Perhaps his philosophy has really made you think about your own spiritual journey and what you can do to lead a more fulfilling life. One of Michael's beliefs is that you need to participate fully in your life and contribute to your community in significant ways.
Okay, now stop. Now,
the
it's
phones
not
are
just
ringing
the,
off the hook.
It's not even the stupid ringing. It's where they place it. There's always a suggestive word, and then the phone rings to get your attention.
Let me listen again. Hold on.
Is that you need to participate fully in your life.
Participate fully, and that's when the ring goes.
Yeah.
Do you think this is all pre-produced, right? Is it
oh,
live?
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm telling you, I got more clips to prove my point.
Okay. Is that you need to participate fully in your life and contribute to your community in significant ways. One way you can do that is by supporting this public television station.
Oh, fantastic. People have to realize that this is advertising 101, okay? This is mind control 101. This is you're so dead on, John. Put it right near the word participate and support. Put that ring in, and there's no phones that ring. These days, just a light goes on.
I think there may be another one. Then there's another phone cue on the next clip.
Here it comes.
We hope you think that is a valuable community service. If you
valuable community service, ring. I'm hearing bells.
If you do, please pick a membership that's right for you and give us a call.
Oh.
Is that beautiful?
That's unbelievable. But, this is...
It's actually creepy. People should be so put off by this. They should never give another nickel to PBS. They're using you. They're using you as a stooge. Play clip E, which I think has a couple more of these cues.
I played clip E. I only have emblem F.
Oh no! Did you play clip D, Tone?
Yeah, I played both of those.
Oh, you played them both one after the other?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was the examples.
So this is, you know, people don't realize that when you're watching a sitcom, there's a laugh track. You know, yes, intellectually you understand it, but you forget about it. And particularly, what's the nerd show, which is...
what's the name of that thing?
Mickey, what's the name of that show? You watch that sometimes.
It's on, I believe it's on...
Yeah, they're all nerds, they're living in one house together. Not Nerds and Beauties, no. But anyway, no, and the show is kind of funny, but the laugh track and that's sophisticated. I mean, this is not just like some stock stuff. You know, they've got different people that they highlight. I mean, it's not just one track. You know, they've got multiple things running. It's a very sophisticated manner to make you feel comfortable because you're laughing with the crowd. And this is done all the time in broadcasting. Do not underestimate. Try this for a while. When you're watching CNN or Fox run by the same people, Do not for a second believe that you are not reading what is scrolling down below. Just focus on that. Turn off the sound and just focus on the news that is streaming down below. That is the ministry of truth talking to you right there. People think they're not reading it. You think that you're not noticing it. You are. Your brain is taking that information in. And that is true propaganda that is running in the crawl on all of these stations in the lower third. Who feeds that stuff? Who feeds it? I can see Robert Gibbs sitting there in his office. He's just, you know, he's got a private Twitter feed and is rolling right into the CNN's crawl and to Fox News's crawl because it's the Democrats running both. And don't for a minute think that that's not influencing you. It is. It really is. And read that. Read what they're saying in those crawls. You'll be astounded.
So anyway, the point is that this phony baloney ringtone, which is it gets your attention, although I think even a Nokia ringtone would do that even better, but it gets your attention, and it's always done on a keyword hit, and it's designed to separate you from your money or to hypnotize you. I mean, I just find the thing to be abhorrent and disgusting that they would even have this on, you know, supposedly our national treasure, which of course we slam constantly because it's a scam. And they have advertising, and then they want your money too. On this show, all we do, we take no advertising. We don't break up the show with a bunch of ads, and we don't have it at the beginning or the end or anything like that. And we, of course, we don't get as much money because we don't pull this kind of bull crap that these guys at PBS do. We're getting $250 at a pop for a DVD of this crazy guy.
Okay, money's been deposited into the payphone. Now we just need it to actually ring. Our ring don't work so well. Oh, wait, there you go.
That'll get your attention. Well, let's thank some people who gave us some money this last week. First of all, Michael, Allison, and Jessica Pavlich, P-A-V-E-L-I-C-H, wanted to wish their father, David Pavlich, happy birthday. It's his 50th birthday on right. December 15th, so they gave us $50. $1 for every day of
year.
His life.
Oh, nice.
Or year. You're saying. Should be $1 for every day of his life. That would be a number. Vincent Dunstan, another Australian. $50.
You're so right. It should have been that. It would have been much better. In future, please give something for every day of the person's life, not just for every year.
Alan Bowes, Langley, British Columbia, another $50. Michael Pocket, Stratford, London, United Kingdom. $51.15. He wants to say hello to his friend John Robinson, a.k.a. Romer.
I'm trying something out here, John. See if the phone brings in more money.
Yeah, might. I'm donating this money to the show instead of Christmas presents between ourselves, as we really want to help the show. Good man, Michael Pocket.
Hey, excellent. Thank you very much. That's highly appreciated.
Anna Jason, J-A-S-I-N, Centennial, Colorado, gave us $52.80, which represents the altitude of Centennial, Colorado. Everyone's getting creative with their gifts here today. Armin Breuer in Wien, Austria.
Vienna.
W-I-E-N, Vienna. he got home wasted, but he knows he won't regret donating. So I guess he was drunk at the time that he sent us $50, which is fine. Felix Schudel, who
is our executive producer.
Who's our executive producer, Felix Schudel, who's in Zurich, Switzerland, Suisse. 100. Sterling Ellsworth came back on board. Sterling is our man in Santa
with
Barbara, California.
77.77?
And 77 cents.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And that's all we got this week.
Got a note from Dan Gardner who says, Adam and John, I truly enjoy your netcasts. I wish I had a few dollars to donate, but right now I don't. I will as soon as I can. I'm a 51-year-old father of eight. Yes, that's eight children with one woman. Congratulations. Good on you, buddy. You're making up for a couple other people who are on board with the program. We just celebrated our 33rd wedding anniversary yesterday, the 12th. I emigrated to the Republic of Texas from the Republic of California about 5 years ago due to the terrible economy here, there. Yeah, no shit. I think you have a good balance between the two of you. I subscribed about so blah, blah, blah. Here you just say, I can't get my head wrapped around the theory that our troops are protecting the poppies in Afghanistan for illegal heroin sales in the U.S. But I do know that some U.S. officials, Clinton, for example, were aware and involved in drugs entering the United States. And here comes for our Christmas gift to our friend Dan. I have a son in the United States Marine Corps who has done two tours in Iraq and will be entering commissioned officer training in January 2010. He listens to No Agenda because of me. His five-year-old son drowned earlier this year while I was vacationing in California. I know you only give shout-outs to those who give $50 or more, but would you please say hello to him anyway? His name is Jamie Gardner. Shout-out to Jamie Gardner. Thank you for your service. I personally, I can't speak for John, but I personally have no problem with our military forces. In fact, I feel horrible for them. They're being misused in these bogus fights.
I have no problem either, and I think they are being misused. Why are they having tour after tour after tour? It's just like desocializing a lot of these guys. They're not very happy about it.
And particularly those that are, they're in the reserves or in the guard, where they're having to go over, and they're 40. These guys are fucking 40. They got businesses. It's destroying everything. Destroying everything. And for
it's
what?
It's irresponsible. It's an irresponsible use of the military.
Yeah, it is. And particularly Marines. I have a soft spot for Marines. So anyway, noagendashow.com or dvorak.org/NA. We not only do we appreciate your help, but we need it. We absolutely need it. And thank you to the people who have responded to me putting the Delta Sierra up for sale. I've got a lot of people working now on helping me with that because I'm just going to put my money where my mouth is. And we hope you guys catch up. So I'll have Adam Curry, eating airplanes since 2009.
There you go.
Remember, we need your support.
Yeah, we support.
It's a good investment.
Yeah, there we go. We'll get the hang of it.
Yeah, we need. But this guy is amazing. This this Milli Vanilli wannabe.
Yeah, well, you're looking at his stuff. Well, anyway, there's one more clip about him. I think. You might want to play the emblem clip just because I spent a little time on checking this bull crap out.
Okay. A little time. You spent some of the time you could have been spending with your family, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, we're back with Michael Bernard Beckwith, the founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center and the...
Agape?
Yeah.
Don't you just pronounce that agape? Because my mouth is agape when I look at this whole... scam.
Yeah, agape is a, I got that one. That's a, an old, apparently goes back to Greek. It's a, means Greek, a Greek with affection, love, but it's essentially really a Christian word used by early, I'm reading from an etymology here, used by early Christians for their love feast held in connection with the Lord's Supper. And, it's essentially modern use often in simpler sense of Christian love. It's different than erotic love, and it's like, I love you.
Yes.
I love you, man.
I love you, man.
I love you,
I love
man.
You. Hey, man, I love you.
Dave is agape.
Hold on a second. Let me mark that. I think that'll be the nice start of the show. Don't you think? I love you, man.
I had a better one earlier.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, play.
Agape.
Well, we're back with Michael Bernard Beckwith, the founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center and the host of our show. One of the things I love about your presentation, you say it's not a performance, it's a transformance, is...
Not like a transgression, it's a transformance.
It's exactly that, is how you mine words for meaning.
Oh, you are so fantastic. Let me touch your dreads.
You find meanings in words that we don't normally think about. For example, the word problem being an emblem.
Right, the problem, that's really where the root word comes from. It's emblematic of our thoughts and our beliefs, and most of those beliefs are hidden. So when we have problems in our life, it's actually an outpicturing of hidden beliefs and things we haven't dealt with yet.
So this is bullcrap.
Now, wait a minute. I'm kind of on board with what he just said there. Not with his message, obviously. And I'm not quite sure how the whole emblem
it's
thing...
It's fine, but it's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. The blem part of the word, which goes back to the Latin, it actually has to do with the word balen, which means to throw, and problem, which is to throw an object, you know, to throw something forward.
So it's projecting. Wait a minute.
Emblem, which also the blem is the same word, but it has to do with a projectile. And in the case of an emblem, it has to do with an adornment. The two words are not connected in the way he has it, which is the word emblem is somehow the root. This is bogus. This is like a made up piece of crap.
John C. Dvorak's pet peeve of the day.
Awesome. Let me mark that as well. I think that might have been the beginning of the show.
I think so.
Let's listen to the rest.
Life, it's actually an outpicturing of hidden beliefs and things we haven't dealt with yet.
So maybe a lot like the name Agape, where you go into the Greek, you go into the ancient meanings.
I bet he goes into the Greek, all right.
Of the words to give new understanding.
Right. It's called inspired wisdom.
Inspired wisdom. Hey, sounded like South Park there. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
It's like inspired wisdom.
Words to give new understanding.
Right. It's called inspired wisdom.
Inspired wisdom. Hey, Timmy, it's inspired wisdom. So that's how they make their money over there at PBS, huh?
Yeah, that's how they make their money, and we get what we get, which is very little by comparison.
So they're saying basically $250 you're going to get saved. We're saying $250, we get saved. I mean, that's the basic difference right there. And it makes so much sense.
Yeah, but they lie.
Yeah, they do. Oh, you have one more clip. Is that
the only clip I have? I just thought it was funny because I was plowing through all the. I was plowing through free. I've got a lot of material from Free Speech TV, which people should watch.
What channel is that on? On the Dish?
Yeah, it's on the Dish.
What channel?
Free Speech TV, and you would actually like this Gay USA show because they essentially are these two gay people, mm-hmm. who Andy Hum and
we've Pete
talked
Murr.
About these people before, and the woman.
Oh, cool. Well, what channel is it on the Dish Network?
It's 93-something. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
It's like four numbers?
Yeah, it's four numbers.
Wow. Free Speech TV. Okay.
Yeah, FSTV.
All right.
And that and Link. Is a kind of, they have
I've
kind
seen
of
Link,
a,
yeah. But I want to say, so it's the gay news? Is that what it is?
Yeah, gay news. Now, the thing that's cool. interesting about it, if you watch, I don't get to watch it as much as actually I should probably record it, but I'd be watching it all the time.
I'll watch it. I love
they
that.
Out people.
No, they do not. They out people on gay news, on gay TV.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And it's actually, if you watch it, at the end of the thing, they have entertainment news and they out everybody.
No.
And it's just jaw dropping. You go, I didn't know that he was gay.
We should do that show on the stream. It's called the I Didn't Know He Was Gay Show. Hi, everybody. Welcome. I'm Adam Curry. How you doing? I bet you didn't know he was gay. Here we go.
So anyway, they have a lot of, unfortunately, they have one, they have one or two agendas that they harp on, which is the main one is gay marriage, and it's just like it becomes quite tedious. But every once in a while they have a piece of news like this, which invites me to do a quick edit on it.
Okay.
And in spite of your casting dispersions earlier, I can report that GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, says it is in the midst of meetings with the Fox Network over their homophobic and transphobic animated shows. They're trying to talk...
Animated shows? Oh, they're talking about South Park.
Family Guy.
Is it no? Is what's the one with the transgendered teacher? I thought that was South Park. Is that Family Guy?
Is that on Fox?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, they also have these gay characters on Simpsons. Yeah. All the animated shows that got a lot of anti-gay.
Transgendered. Ooh, big problem.
No, but it's true. But listen to the. There's a. By the way, there's a new meme in here, and then there's also a kind of a pun joke that if a non-gay person did it, they'd get slammed for it. But play the whole thing again.
All right, here we go. The whole thing? All right, here we go. Stand by.
And in spite of your casting dispersions earlier, I can report that GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, says it is in the midst of meetings with the Fox Network over their homophobic and transphobic animated shows. They're trying to talk to them about how that's done. Now, I think these conversations are not very useful.
Fruitful.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, God, outstanding. Fruitful.
So he uses fruitful as a gag.
That's funny.
It is funny, but the thing that really stuck out was the transphobic. Yes.
Transphobic.
Term.
Transphobic.
Never heard it before. It's a new one. They're going to slip that one in.
Well, but it's and this is another thing that it's kind of interesting. Going back to the population control, there's tons of evidence, scientific evidence, and by the way, as you know,
don't be a denier. The science is in. Science!
We are true believers in science. That the chemicals that are being put in our water supply are effeminate. Is that the word, effeminating?
Well, no, I don't think that's the word, but that's what the effect is. Yeah, there are some things that apparently are here and there that are turning frogs into,
Froguettes.
Froguettes.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're sterilizing us, but this stuff also, it makes us girly men.
And yeah.
I think over a certain age, it doesn't make much difference.
At a certain age, it's like too late.
Yeah, what difference gives a crap? I'll just pop some Viagra. Anything with a heartbeat is good enough. This is trans, what do they call it?
Transphobic.
Transphobic.
If you put an echo behind that, it would sound good. Transphobic.
Okay, I'll do an echo in post on you there. That was good. Oi.
Well, so what else we got? Well, I got a couple little loose ends here I can bring in.
Well, the one thing I'd like to, and this is not something we'll go through in great detail, but Matt Taibbi, who has been writing about the financial industry for Rolling Stone magazine for the past, I guess, almost a year and a half, maybe even close to 2 years now. And it's so funny that this all shows up in Rolling Stone, which, of course, is not exactly the place you'd expect to read about the financial industry or the
apparently somebody lost their ass.
Yeah. So he's done another excellent article. Of course, the last one we received from Matt was about Goldman Sachs and their high frequency trading and how they're, well, he's following the same meme here. This new article, which you must read, it is a must read article. I know it's very difficult for a lot of you to read, but this is one that you just, and you got to focus on it because your eyes do start to swim when you're like, there's so many names here. It's titled Obama's Big Sellout. Subtitle, the president has packed his economic team with Wall Street insiders intent on turning the bailout into an all-out giveaway. And what he does is he details in great detail, I should say, exactly who came into his administration, who he threw under a bus after getting elected, and how they're all essentially connected to the Rubens and Goldman Sachs. And there's another little ditty in here that he claims that people are now literally calling for Timmy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, to be fired, which, of course, he should be. They all should be thrown out of there. But when you read through it, it is an unbelievable accounting of how our president came into office, in fact, the first paragraph of this article sums it up. What inspired supporters who pushed him, Obama, to his historic win was the sense that a genuine outsider was finally breaking into an exclusive club, that walls were being torn down, that things were, for lack of a better or more specific term, changing. Then he got elected. And then he talks about this complete about face, how the people who actually arranged for the bailout were all Wall Street insiders, how they were Wall Street insiders, then a part of the bailout teams. It's an unbelievable account. And you read this, you go, holy crap. Now, of course, we've been discussing every single one of these names and all the things they've been doing for the past 2 years. And hence we've been labeled crackpot and the buzzkill. And some of these people who weren't on board with the program, well, we know what's happened to them because essentially they got two to the head. We've had scores of bankers who weren't participating in the scam, suicide themselves with aspirin. Although that's not mentioned in the article. That's the only piece he's really missing. You must read this. It's under the heading financial in the show notes at noagendashow.com. It's the only link under financial. And when you read this, you will just be blown away. Please send this to your friends. This is the kind of thing that print it out for them because, you know, it's, oh, you read it online. It's like, oh, I have to scroll so much. It's so hard to read about the truth. So print it out in big, big text and let people read this because they'll be blown away. And there's also, Mike did a video, maybe even send people the video. Matt. Great article, great reporting, proof that I'm not quite sure how it happens. I'm not sure, quite sure why it's in Rolling Stone magazine. That makes very little sense to me, but I'm very happy that it's there.
Yeah, well, like I said, somebody obviously lost money and got
really pissed off. And maybe it was John Wenner.
Sorry?
Maybe John Wenner. Isn't he the Rolling Stone dude?
Yeah, Jan Wenner, yeah.
Jan Wenner, yeah. Maybe he got pissed off.
It's possible that he took a bath and he's irked.
I'd like to do an actual minute, John, if you don't mind.
It's the No Agenda Swine Flu Minute.
This is from one of our listeners / producers, Brad from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and he received the following phone call. Here it comes.
Hello, this is Dr. Robert Mead, president of the Bell Medical Group. Our records indicate somebody in your household is at high risk for H1N1 influenza. The best protection against H1N1 is to get vaccinated. Allen Health is pleased to inform you that we have a limited supply of H1N1 vaccine available for individuals in high-risk categories. To verify your eligibility and to schedule an appointment to receive the H1N1 vaccine, please call your regular Allen Family Medical Clinic today. Thank you.
How unbelievable is that? They're telemarketing H1N1 vaccinations.
That's unbelievable.
Telemarketing.
Yeah.
So of course, I'm sure part of the reason is because they have too much of this stuff laying around. But everyone I talk to, and I've talked to women who are pregnant, I've talked to parents with kids, obviously. And when I bring up the swine flu, like, you know, they do listen because there is worry amongst the good citizens of Gitmo Nation. And they all say, wow, you know, my doctor's really pushing me on this. I mean, like, really, really pushing me, you know, and like, oh, you know, the science is in, you've got to get this. And of course, now, as we have already predicted, all we have to wait for is the second wave. That is the next meme. So the second wave is when people will actually start to go. And I have to say, I now know someone who had a family member die of ILI, influenza-like illness. And it was pneumonia, of course, that killed this poor woman. And it happens, but it was, you know, the way it was labeled and it's changed that family's perception, no doubt. And it's very, very hard when you have people, you know, everyone knows someone, you know, there's only 6 degrees of separation. When you hear about this, then you're real quick to like, oh shit, I don't want that. And I should get me one of them shots, but you don't want to take it. It's not only a financial scam. I'm very worried about what else is in these vaccines. You know, when you go to Walgreens and you say, why don't you ask for the insert? I'm not talking about their little flyer, but ask for the actual insert and look at what's in the vaccine before you take it. Go home, Google some of that stuff, and then question if you really want that injected into your body.
Yeah, really.
I have a couple more things.
Well, I got a thing here, a couple interesting. You know, the Swedish Military Intelligence Agency gained privilege to gained the privilege to legally wiretap all traffic moving through Sweden on December 1st.
Yeah, which I think 80% of Russia's traffic runs through the Swedish exchange, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and also Finland, almost all of theirs. This guy from Finland, Nyberg, wrote me bitching. And so I suppose that really means the CIA.
Yeah, of course it does. And it's just the beginning of the takedown. Again, my prediction for 2010 is, and I'll say it again, it's the hackers, it's the true engineers who are going to save us because we need mesh networks. We now have mobile devices that can make it even more possible than before. We need to create an undernet, which we can connect through because the internet will be taken down. It won't actually be turned off, but it's all going to be sanctioned, good for your health. It's going to be approved. There'll be filters. The United States, of course, is the worst where there's, you know,
oh, we're filtered to death. I can't get the Dvorak Uncensored blog into half the companies in this country because it's all filtered by these nebulous little companies that help filter the internet for you because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And then I can't get into half of Russia won't take my blog. Apparently, you know, spotty around the world. I've always asked people, go check it out. Go to Dvorak.org and see if you can bring it up at all in your country.
Yeah, we should do a roll call test and see where where Dvorak, even Curry.com is worse. I think I get filtered more than Dvorak.org.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Well, maybe.
If you wouldn't mind, John, I would just, we didn't do this on Thursday. We probably should have because of the timeliness of it, but I was so blown away by the Stargate portal opening up over Norway that I didn't get to it. Bear with us, listeners. And listen to the acceptance speech. And John, you and I should just break in a little bit here. And we won't play the whole thing, but it's linked in the show notes, noagendashow.com, curry.com, dvorak.org. President Barack Obama's acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize with the emphasis on peace.
I understand why war is not popular.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much.
Ta-da!
It's the Peace Prize.
But I also know this. The belief that peace is desirable is rarely enough to achieve it. Peace requires responsibility. Peace entails sacrifice. That's why NATO continues to be indispensable.
NATO is an army, isn't it? So peace is only possible through armies.
Why we must strengthen UN and regional peacekeeping and not leave the task...
Peacekeeping, that's the guys with the blue helmets. Ah, okay. I just
and
want to
guns.
Make sure. And guns. Yeah, blue helmets and guns.
To a few countries. That's why we honor those who return home from peacekeeping and training abroad.
Oh, yes. Come home from peacekeeping. This is unbelievable. This blows me the F away when I hear this. This is the Nobel Peace Prize. This is supposed to be given to people who have done something incredible for peace. For peace. You don't achieve peace by showing your fist to somebody. That's not the way to do it. But this is what our president is proclaiming in front of a global stage. Oh, by the way, don't think I saw this on the 6 o'clock news.
To Oslo and Rome, to Ottawa and Sydney, to Dhaka and Kigali. We honor them not as makers of war, but as wagers of peace.
And you go. Not as what makers of war, but of wagers of peace. He's talking about military.
Yeah, he's talking about, again, I hate to bring it up one more time, Hitler.
Yes.
Hitler was a wager of peace by his definition.
Really? Do you have an example of him saying that? That he was a wager of peace?
No, I'm just saying by his definition, that's what you'd have to call him.
So are you equating the President of the United States of America to Hitler?
No, I'm equating his commentary. Well, perhaps. I didn't mean to, but what I meant to say, and I'll say it again, is that by his logic, Hitler was a wager of peace.
Let me make one final point about the use of force.
It's a good thing.
Even as we make difficult decisions about going to war, we must also think clearly about how we fight it.
It makes me want to cry. It does.
You know, he could have given a lot of different speeches at this thing. What idiot advisor had him give a war speech, a saber-rattling speech, in front of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee in Oslo, when he could have given a million different speeches? He could have talked about all kinds of things.
He could have, you know, he could have done the old politician thing of, you know, there's this, you know, this this group of young kids in Detroit, and you know, they're trying to make things better for the elderly. He could have done a million things. This makes me so sad. It really does.
The Nobel Committee recognized this truth in awarding its first prize for peace
to a warmonger,
to Henri Dunant.
Who was that?
I don't know.
Henri Dunant? Did he say it? Let's just listen again.
Yeah, I don't know. You
look it up. This is good.
In awarding its first prize for peace to Henri Dunant, the founder of the Red Cross, and a driving force behind the Geneva Conventions.
Yeah, which are war rules.
To abide by.
Yeah, the Geneva Convention are war rules. That's not peace.
Where force is necessary, we have a moral and strategic interest in binding ourselves to certain rules of conduct.
Of war.
And even as we confront a vicious adversary that abides by no rules.
Oh, those guys don't fight fair. We fight peacefully.
I believe the United States of America must remain a standard bearer in the conduct of war.
I'm so embarrassed. I'm just fucking embarrassed. Embarrassed is what I am.
Hey, they gave this award, the same award, to Yasser Arafat. I mean, give me a break. These guys are crazy.
But we...
That is what makes us different from those whom we fight.
Oh, we're better than them. That's what it is. We're better than them. Because we don't kill you in an inhumane way with a bomb, an IED. No, we just shoot you through the head. That's what we do. We do it in the humane way. Yeah, there you go.
That is a source of our strength.
All right, that's enough of
this
guy.
That is why I prohibited torture. That is
Lie. He prohibited torture.
I don't get it. I wish someone must be a neoliberal out there or a Democrat or somebody who could send us a note explaining what. The headline is, "What was he thinking?" with some logical explanation, because I don't get it. I don't know what he's thinking. Why does he give a speech like this? I mean, they're not going to run it in the U.S. anyway. I mean, he could have said anything. He could have had essentially the Nobel Peace Prize is supposedly kind of targeted toward, making up for the fact that Alfred Nobel invented dynamite and more people would directly killed by his invention than pretty much any other single inventor, I guess, or supposedly, even though the potential is there for the H-bomb, of course. But, and so Nobel was guilt-ridden, so he came up with this peace prize to encourage, just essentially no more war. Especially a no more war award, but I don't know what they're thinking, and I don't know what Obama's thinking. He could have come up
I know what he's thinking.
He could have done a milquetoast speech, it would have been fine.
A second time this show you've used that wonderful term. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from a character named Casper Milquetoast, and it's spelled Milquetoast, and I'm pretty sure it was a character that was invented by Sinclair Lewis.
Good, I like it. Milquetoast. Because, of course, I would have spelled it M-I-L-K, but...
Yeah, which is the way it's spelled, but the Sinclair Lewis character was Casper, C-A-S-P-A-R, Milquetoast, M-I-L-Q-U-E, toast.
So I will remind you that you are going to retrieve the password for the NoAgendaShow.com site. I told you that before, and I'm telling you again.
That.
Yes, I did. I told you at the office. Because there's another excellent story from VeteransToday.com that I want everyone to have a read through. And I also have high hopes for our veterans, by the way, who are just now finally coming out and saying, you know, this is so much bull. This is... An article, The Hunt for Bin Laden is a National Shame. First paragraph. Conservative commentator, former Marine Colonel Bob Pappas has been saying for years that Bin Laden died at Tora Bora and that Senator Kerry's claim that Bin Laden escaped with Bush's help was a lie. Now we know that Pappas was correct. The embarrassment of having Secretary of State Clinton talk about bin Laden in Pakistan was horrific. He's been dead since December 13th, 2001. And now finally, everyone, Obama, McChrystal, Cheney, everyone who isn't nuts is finally saying what they've known for years. And the crux of this article is, of course, that hundreds of our military personnel died in this phantom search for Obama, in this fake search, which was corroborated by... I keep forgetting her name. The woman who was killed in Pakistan, who even said on, I think the BBC interview, bin Laden's dead, you know, he was killed. And so, you know, it is such a sham. And of course, now they're moving this whole concept over to, what do they call them? MDK or whatever, Malek Awad. Fox News is even abbreviating his name. So it's easier for us to understand, us stupid sheeple. And even then I forgot about it. And they're bringing him to a civil court in New York. And we're all focusing, oh, this is the guy that really did it. It wasn't bin Laden.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, I know. Yeah, they're switching it over from bin Laden to this other character is ridiculous.
It's outrageous.
I mean, they've been talking about bin Laden since the Clinton administration. Now all of a sudden it's something new. And I guess they expect everyone to buy into it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they still do surveys and they still find that half the American public believes that Iraq was somehow behind 9/11 because we were told that by some meme early on that George Bush managed to pull off.
WMD. See? You remember? Does it bring up those? Do you remember? Oh, yes. WMD. Oh, yeah. I remember. And you can wait for it. Here's what's going to happen in 2010 as you go through the checkpoint. It's no longer called airport security. Through the checkpoint. Get used to the checkpoints. Where you take off your shoes, put them in the bin, take off your belt, put them in the bin, pick up shoes, jacket, cell phone, take out your Ken doll, put it in the bin. Now it'll be spit out that chewing gum, spit out that chewing gum, you slave! As a 25-year-old Ukrainian chemistry student died when he chewed chemically treated gum that exploded and blew off part of his face. Quote, a loud pop was heard from the student's room, Ukrnews.com says. When his relatives entered the room, they saw that the lower part of the young man's face had been blown off. What happened was, a forensic examination established, the chewing gum was covered with an unidentified chemical substance thought to be some type of explosive material. Horribly, police questioning revealed that the student had a bizarre habit of chewing gum after dunking it into citric acid. On his table, police found both citric acid packets and a similar-looking unidentified substance to believe to be some kind of explosive material. Now, unless it's C4...
What? Well, yeah. C4 you could probably chew on. It's not going to blow up. It needs a really strong blasting cap to fire off.
So this story sounds bogus to me. It doesn't, and, you know, it sounds just like the shoe bomber. And now we're not going to be able to chew gum. But you watch, after the checkpoint, you can buy a stick of Juicy Fruit for $20 along with your $15 bottle of water.
This story sounds totally bogus.
Reported by Boing Boing.
Well, that's not a news source. It's their blog.
Well, no, here's the Ukrainian student killed by excluding chewing via. Let's see. Well, there it is a news source. It's from a news agency. Chemistry student. So, you know, you watch. I guarantee you, you're gonna have to spit out your gum, slave. Spit out that gum.
Well, right?
Open
your
mouth.
Water,
open, right? Open your mouth. You watch. 2010. Mark it down. My prediction. Open your mouth, sir, please. Okay? They're going to be looking in your mouth. When I flew to Los Angeles the other day, I wasn't paying attention, and I got in the biometric data line by accident. I've given up. You know, I'm like, pfft. So I got into the biometric data scanner where you have to hold your hands above your head like a true fucking slave.
Is this the one that scans you naked, yeah, or is it one that has, yeah, the puffer?
No, not the puffer. No, it's the one that scans you naked. So no. You have to stand there, and of course, on two yellow footprints, Don't move off. Stand on the yellow footprints. Stand on the yellow footprints. Okay. Then I had to wait because the TSA officer was changing the guard, which means someone else puts on the headset. And they're like, okay, come through. And then there's another two yellow things you have to stand on. And then you have to put your hands above your head. And, of course, I had my index fingers extended. I couldn't resist. I'm like, you know, I'm throwing, flipping the bird two times. And then it's like, okay, that's enough. And you come through, stand over on the next yellow footprints. And then you have to wait to be cleared. So now they're calling over to someone who just looked at me naked. And to make sure that I wasn't carrying.
Was it a guy or a girl?
Well, it was a, I don't know. You don't know because you don't know who's looking at you naked.
There's probably some guy.
Besides a bunch of guys laughing their ass off, like, look at that guy. Hey, he's got an innie.
If you were working that job, you'd be laughing your ass off,
Of course
too.
I would be. I'd be like Twitter TwitPig, baby. This would be fantastic. No, of course, they're all laughing their ass off. And you have to wait, and you wait, and you wait. Okay, you're clear.
It's cleared. A form of subtle, not so subtle, humiliation of the American public one person at a time.
And it's called a checkpoint. That is brand new. This is a new meme.
Yeah,
you spotted
this already. Checkpoint. Checkpoint. Let me see your papers.
And then finally one, and then I'll let you close it out, John. Finally, one great link, which is a picture link, of something called narcotecture. Have you ever heard of this? Narcotecture?
No.
PJ Tobia is, this is a blog, I guess. He lives in Kabul. And he took a whole bunch of pictures of what they call poppy palaces, better known as narcotecture. So this is Afghanistan. This is Kabul. When you see these, in fact, I'm seeing this link right now. You have to see this, John. When you see this link, when you see these palaces that are the poppy palaces, and how, I mean, it's unbelievable how the grandeur of these things is a funny one. Actually has a sign on it that says for rent.
For
yeah, look at it. It's like the third one down. These are like Sheikh's palaces. In fact, here's one. The Prince of Siam lived here when he manufactured and distributed heroin. This is Kabul. This is what we're protecting. We're protecting these palaces. We're protecting the poppies. We are helping the drug trade. It's now being reported in mainstream news. They're not hiding it. Everyone knows what's going on. And, you know, let's just go talk about Tiger Woods. Yeah. So, John, before you close out the show, I will just say one more time, it is so abundantly clear. I wake up every single morning thinking, oh, my God, it is exactly as predicted.
Atlas Shrugged.
By Ayn Rand.
Go read the book.
And why? Call me. I read it. Stinks.
It's a great book. It is exactly what's happening right now. It's called Atlas Shrugged. I am not an Ayn Rand groupie, but this book really spells it out. And the megalomaniac politicians, the, ooh, let's save the world and let's make sure we save ourselves first, the rich. It's all in there. It's all in there. It is happening as we speak.
Yeah. So, just a few things I wanted to get out of off this list. I want people to pay a little more close attention to language and how they're, you know, kind of manipulate your thought process. But, you know, again, if you see denier or denialist, you're looking at a piece of propaganda. They've also decided by like a new term has come up called warmist.
A warmist. Nice.
And so they're trying to get, the pro-warming people are trying to get the term alarmist out of the vernacular and change it to warmist, which is a nice and cuddly term. They also should note that I didn't get into it today, but I want to discuss this possibility since everything that we talk about here, sometimes we look for double, triple meanings. There is a very interesting Bert Rutan, the rocket scientist, literally guy who has a PDF or a PowerPoint show where it's very against the whole.
Well, he does a great job of showing the fraction of, CO2 that is actually emitted by humans, and right. B, he shows, you know, he's a test pilot, so and he deals with data that will literally save his life, and he goes through this very simple process of saying This is bullcrap.
But his real concern is the interesting, because he says the only thing that really threatens humanity is never, even if it did have global warming, it's not going to threaten humanity. It's going to sink a couple of islands maybe, but ice ages are the big threat to humanity. And all these, it's almost as if Gore and the rest of them are doing everything they can to maybe trigger an ice age as part of this death cult that they're part of, this population control. What better way to do some population control than throw up an ice age?
I think the best way to do it is to burn old people for fuel. I think that's going to work.
I think it's the carbon footprint's too high.
Yeah. Hey, what's your carbon footprint? And Chinese drivers in San Francisco. We should burn those for fuel too.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Remember, you're living in Gitmo Nation. All we do is report it, and we actually report on it. So go have a look at some of the links in the show notes at noagendashow.com. Don't procrastinate. No, I shouldn't say that. Do it.
And pay careful attention when you're watching PBS for those ringing bells.
Yeah. Pay close attention to everything that's happening on television. Or better yet, turn it off.
Yeah, turn it off.
It's poisoning you.
Go read a book.
Yeah. Ooh, I have a suggestion for you.
You already suggested it.
Coming to you from the minimum security containment cell, which houses not only the Crackpot Command Center, but two beautifully decorated Christmas trees, as you can see on Curry.com. My name's Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, home of Cap and Trade.
Yay!
I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again on Thursday, right here on No Agenda.